Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Finish your deep-fried banana and peanut butter sandwich. It's time for Must Have CTV, the podcast dedicated to the sitcoms of the 20th century from I Love Lucy to News Radio. And I'm your TV guy, Brett White. And I'm also a reporter, producer for Decider.com. And y'all, it's been 4 months since the last episode, and we are still in quarantine. But I've had one shot. I got some Pfizer in my fists. Well, not in my upper arm. They didn't inject it between my fingers. That'd be wild. In my knuckles. And we're almost done. This week, I'm joined by two people that I think were with me at the very start of the quarantine. I'm losing my mind still. Curtis Rutherford.
Hello. Hi.
And Courtney Rose Halyard.
Hello.
Hello. How are y'all doing?
All right.
Good, yeah.
Welcome back. We're still in lockdown.
Yes.
Well, what is different for y'all? April 2020, April 2021, side by side, what are the differences?
I mean, yeah, we also have that vax pulsing through our veins.
Yeah.
So we got a little bit of superpower, but...
I guess the light at the end of the tunnel is closer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, well, we're not urgently looking for toilet paper, I guess.
Yeah.
It isn't novel. Because it was, there was a sick sense of fun in March and a little bit of April 2020 of like, this is horrible, but like everyone's doing digital everything. There's all these reunions that everyone's doing. And I was recording podcast. I was releasing like 3 a week. I was just like, whatever.
Yeah.
And then December happened. Then God. Sorry, listeners, for being gone for 4 months. I did not intend for that to happen. It truly doesn't feel like we're already in April of this year. But I have been busy working on a book that the listeners already know about. So I've talked to Ed Asner since last we talked. He did not know Hayden Rourke, and he was like, I wasn't on I Dream of Jeannie. And I was like, no, you... Hayden was at the actor's strike in 1980 that you led. So I got some quotes there. It was really great. He just gave me Gavin McLeod's phone number without me asking for it. So that was fun. I still have not worked up the nerve to call. And in the gap, I was also very busy with WandaVision coverage, which I feel like I should have done an episode of this podcast about that show, but dropped the ball on that.
I mean, we kind of connected.
I don't know if I was... There was something recently where I was like, I should do a this, but I was like, no, because we just talked about... Yeah, like we did It May Look Like a Walnut on our episode.
Yeah.
And that is... I mean, honestly, that is... canonically WandaVision, like WandaVision's favorite episode, Wanda's favorite episode of television. They specifically shouted out. And they shouted out using not the production order, but actually the air date order, which is how they were aired on the DVDs. And other sites were like, well, they flubbed this. And I was like, bitch, no. they found those DVDs and they were like, what actual number is on the DVD? Gotta love the detail. But yeah.
There was also, I don't know how you felt, but I, like, when we saw Wanda's DVD collection and many of her, like, childhood DVDs were things that came out when I was in high school or college, I was like, I am so much older than this character, which I knew. But then I think because, like, I don't know.
Well, they also, they honestly did flub that because she was born in 1989. And they said that she lost her parents when she was 10, so that's 1999. Malcolm in the Middle started January 99, yeah. So season one was not done yet when that bomb went off. And also people pointed out that Bewitched did not hit DVDs until mid-2000s, like 2004. So the fact that she had
it was probably on Nick at Night or something.
Yeah,
but
so...
Yeah, she's technically a year younger than me. So I was like, wait a second, how is... she getting these on DVD unless she's got them all bootleg.
Yeah, so I mean, like, who knows what Sokovia has in the bootleg. I remember when I first moved to New York, I was so excited because I found like Lost season 2 and Office season 2 on DVD like weeks before they were supposed to be out, and I was like, ooh, they were legit. I don't know,
like someone's like, shh, come back in the van.
Where, like, okay. Where did I buy those off the street? I honestly can't remember where I bought those.
Yeah, because there were those guys who would like be at like Union Square and stuff, and we had the little table of just like,
here's this, ain't out for a while, but wild. So have y'all developed any comfort shows in the past? Well, let's go like past 4 months, past year, but like what's the most recent comfort shows, if you have any, getting you through?
I don't know if there's
any
been
binges
comfort shows. We've binged a lot in here.
Yeah. We had kind of the opposite. We were watching Babylon Berlin, which is fantastic, but we had to, it's like Weimar Republic Germany, you know, like a detective cop show, Weimar Republic Germany. So it's all of that, but then, you know, it's like leading in obviously to the collapse of the Republic.
Yeah.
And with like all of the Trump stuff stuff happening, I was like, I can't watch a show about the decimation of a democracy.
Yeah.
And then also it started where it was very noir at first, and like obviously there was like some like little bits of like gentle Reiching that there was going on, but then all of a sudden it like one of the main characters, there was like this big reveal that he was Jewish and had like all of this,
you know, like in his house, and oh yeah, that's my menorah.
Yeah, like he has like menorahs and stuff, and we were sitting there and we're like, no, put the menorah away.
Oh god, yeah.
Do not play your dreidel on the stoop. Put this away. It was it was very much like one of those things where we were like, I can't deal with this both in like life ended.
That's how I felt watching It's a Sin on HBO Max when it finally came, because it's about 1981, London, gay nightlife, and they're like, what is this? AIDS isn't a thing. And it's a...
If you want a...
Oof. Oh, God.
A happy AIDS, that's a bad statement, but if you want a better, the film Pride is one of my favorite films, and it's also set in London in the 1980s, and they're fighting for gay rights, but they're also wind up teaming up with the Welsh miners.
Ooh.
Because the miners are, they're being kicked out, you know, Maggie Thatcher, she's having her fun.
She's getting living her life,
so
ironing around.
They wind up supporting each other. And like it's actually based on a true story of like how
did that just recently come out?
No, like, it came out I think in like 2014.
Okay, because I don't know if I've seen like a poster or something. I don't know, you know.
But yeah,
I take in pop culture. It comes and goes, and I don't know where I see it. but this week, oh lordy, we are going to be traveling to January 23rd, 1989. Rain Man ruled the box office. Two Hearts by Phil Collins topped the charts, proving that apparently any Phil Collins song can go to number one in the 80s.
Yeah.
And NBC aired the ALF episode, Suspicious Minds. Oof. Curtis and Courtney, you must have seen Suspicious Minds before today.
So we were both like, when you emailed like Alf, we were like, out of the options, we were like, let's do Alf. We were both big Alf fans when we were kids and had not rewatched any Alf at all. And we were like, yes. Because we'd watched some of like Dinosaurs, which we both loved as kids. And watching...
I think Dinosaurs holds up.
Oh, exactly. Yeah.
Yes. Let's go to that.
This is a sitcom.
Yeah.
And it's sometimes a clunky sitcom, and because, you know, they didn't have an audience to like bounce things up, blah, blah, blah. But yeah, I think it was fun.
Yeah.
Because it's a very much, it's just like you have the costume over like real things. So it's like,
yeah,
they're real people doing these real things. And it's like just the added aspect of like adding in the dinosaur, like, little things, which gives it like little punny aspects to it, but yeah,
and a great like sitcom cast.
Yeah. Oh,
right?
I mean, like, Jessica Walter is in. Like, yeah. It's great. Yeah,
who is his boss? I can't remember his boss.
Was it Sherman Helmsley?
Yes, Sherman Helmsley. Exactly. Yeah. Where it's like every character, it's like, oh well, yeah, this guy's great. This is gonna be, this is hilarious.
I think I emailed y'all to see if you wanted to do Punky Brewster, Alf, and I can't remember what the other one was.
Can't remember, but the other one was something I have never seen Punky Brewster ever. So that was like option two, because I was like, oh, I've never seen that. So that I think that would be like an interesting.
Yeah, it is weird.
One to go, because I know it's very like morally.
Yes.
Like it's very like. But yeah, so, oh, Perfect Strangers.
Oh, yeah,
which I loved as a kid too.
Yeah.
But yeah, both of us were like, oh yeah, like Alf, we were totally like, oh my God, I was totally into that as a kid. And this is definitely 100% like, it should be kept in our memories.
Choices were made.
Yeah.
Alf was a cultural touchstone it was actually a legit hit, as we'll get to at the end of the episode, but it was like everywhere.
Yeah,
even though the cast, you know, hated being on this show.
Yes.
Which I have to imagine, when you're second built to a puppet and also your entire like where you can stand and walk and move, it's probably not filmed in front of a live audience because of puppet shenanigans. It's just like this stupid stuffed animal is dictating their paychecks. I would be resentful too.
Yeah, because apparently so Paul Fusco, who like it was Alf, was so secretive about all of it that they would not allow audiences in because they didn't want to give away any of the Alf secrets.
And also, you weren't allowed to refer to it as a puppet. It was Alf. So it was like very much a thing of like, you know, this is Alf, and
he's like a method actor. It's like,
it's like
Alf is in his trailer.
Yeah, and you're like, okay.
Which has to make it worse, even like, okay, you have these horrifically long shoots because you're dealing with all of this, and then dealing with a method actor on the best of days is terrible, but a method actor puppeteer?
Yeah.
No.
But, you know, they got paid, I'm assuming. I hope.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe that SAG strike in 1980 really came through for them. This is 1989. So this week on Must Have Seen TV, we're going to be talking about the Alf episode, Suspicious Minds. It is the 15th episode of season 3, and it was written by Al Jean and Michael Rice and directed by Nick Havinga. Here's how Prime Video describes the episode. Alf is convinced that a reclusive neighbor is actually Elvis Presley. Courtney and Curtis, how accurate is that description?
I guess that is exactly accurate.
There is nothing more to this episode.
There's nothing really. There's nothing more to the episode. Is just that he is convinced that the new neighbor is Elvis on very like general bait. Like, there's not. It's very like thin.
Yeah, it goes back. So like, the episode starts with something that we gotta talk about. Like, he's sitting and he's reading a book that is called Elvis is Alive, I'm Really, Really Sure. And he's saying that, like, you know, Elvis was in a crowd scene in Gandhi. And just to take a step back in the macro, this was such a huge thing. Like, I mean, born in 84, grew up in the late 80s, early 90s, and Elvis was still ubiquitous, especially like Elvis sightings, Elvis hunters, Elvis memorabilia, characters obsessed with Elvis, to a point where I think that if you were born in 99, 2000, you cannot understand how ubiquitous this man who had already been dead for about 15 years was still.
Yeah. like National Enquirer, there would always be, you'd go to the grocery store, there would be like several magazines, several tabloids that would have the most recent like Elvis sightings.
People would see him at gas stations. I mean, it was literally like aliens, Bigfoot, Elvis.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's such a weird moment in time. And this episode just is that.
Yeah.
I didn't understand the joke. So like he's there, he's reading it. All of the Tanners are like, that's not true.
Yeah.
Elvis is dead. And then he's been dead for 14 years or however, 12. And then he was like, how do you explain him standing in line for Pirates of the Caribbean? And then it goes to the theme song. So explain that joke to me.
So I don't know if I would classify that as joke per se. as much as trying to justify the hypothesis. Like, it just seems like you're just handing another piece of fact information that you personally believe. But yeah, I wouldn't really say.
Yeah, I think a problem that came up. So we ended up watching when it started, when we first were like, oh, we're going to watch this episode. Courtney was like, oh, well, let's watch the first episode of Elf, because just to catch up. We watched the first episode, which is bizarre. We watched the second, third, and then we watched an episode before this one. And the problem in all of them, or there's several problems, one of the problems is the directors, I think, were generally not comedy directors, and they will often like cut at the wrong spot. So they won't cut after a joke. They'll like be a weird crossfade while Alf is telling a joke into the theme song or something, which doesn't make any sense.
I noticed the pacing of it was so slow, and not even just the pacing of the editing, but like the pacing of, well, yeah, like we'll get to that in a second, but like it's just bizarre. Yeah. And I've watched a bit of Alf, holiday episodes, the Christmas episode, which I think is season two. Do y'all know the lore of the Alf Christmas episode, which I should definitely
know.
Like that a Make-A-Wish girl wrote in to like, I want to meet Alf, and Paul Fusco like facilitated like a video, like a 1980s Zoom of like Alf saying hello to her. And then like he was so moved by it that he decided to, like, the Christmas episode was Alf accidentally gets donated as a toy to the children's wing of a hospital where he befriends. Well, hold up. He befriends the terminally ill girl, but also he gets trapped in the elevator with a pregnant woman and delivers her baby. That also happens. And then he befriends a terminally ill girl. And they're like, is she going to make it? And the doctors are just like, I mean, no. How do you tell a girl she's not going to see another Christmas? No punches are pulled. It is just blunt as fuck. The episode ends with Alf talking the like janitor of the hospital who's old friends with Willie. Alf like talks him off of a ledge because he wants to commit suicide by jumping off a bridge. So Alf like talks him down. And then I think the episode at the end like is dedicated to like name of the girl 1979 to 1987 or something like, and then it's done and it's an hour. It's two parts.
Oh no.
It's a must watch. It is. But like that, it like when you think Alf, you think like goofy, fun.
Yeah.
And it's just like Alf is a nightmare.
Specifically,
the opening credits. So by season three, the opening credits are the Tanners watching a clip show of Alf fucking up their lives, and they're like,
I know. It's like, it's very funny. And I was kind of, when we watched the episode and then I was researching about it, they were saying that like in there were ties that they could have made to other like stories and plots that they just like left out, like the fact that he's reading this book, like magazine or whatever, and they said, you know, in an earlier thing, in an earlier episode, Kate, the mom, like to keep Alf entertained, was buying him magazines from the supermarket.
Oh, that,
so like they
loved tabloids. Yeah. In a previous episode, he loved tabloids, and they could have brought that back.
Instead, it's weird.
Cheaply made production book of where like we took a book and we taped a new cover onto it.
How did Elf get that book? Who bought that for him?
And that's the thing is like she immediately is like, "Where did you get that from?" And it's like, "Well, what? Legends of the Week Club?"
Yeah.
Like it's like, "Oh weird,
yeah, it's subscribed."
It's like, that could have been an easy tie-in of like I feel like a lot of the issues when we were watching it is it just seemed like they make things harder than they need to be.
Yeah.
Like it's just, it feels like there's a lot of things where you're like, oh, this is an easy thing. Like, but it just seems like a lot of.
But let's not do that. Let's.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. But and you really don't get the episode started until Raquel comes over, Mrs. Ackman,
Jerry Seinfeld's mom.
Yeah, that's Liz Sheridan.
It's like that's when the show, like that should be the first opening thing is about like, oh, there's this neighbor that looks like Elvis and I've been reading, like it's got to be him or something.
She comes over and she's like, I made the Sylvester Stallone pot. So her delivery here is where I'm talking about the editing and pacing of the show is bonkers because she's like, I tried that pot roast that Sylvester Stallone had. I'll tell you, I punched that meat and it never got tender or something.
Yeah.
And then another like couple seconds. Between that and Rambo 3, he sure is missing. And then there is the laugh track is like a polite chuckle. Like they don't
exactly.
They don't
feels
even
like the laugh track halfway through Sports Night when Aaron Sorkin was like, "No more laugh track." It's like, why did you add a polite chuckle to your own joke?
It's like go for it. Like give if you're doing a laugh track, tens every time. Be that 70s show where every single joke is hilarious, and that is where it's like she is funny. Liz Sheridan. Yes. I mean, honestly, so in one of the episodes, like episode 3 or 4 of Must Have Seen TV, we did the pen episode of Seinfeld where Jerry goes to Florida and he lives with her. And her her delivery of, I hate her like poison, when she's talking about just so, like that just, she's brilliant. And
yeah,
I think this is
one of the episodes we watched to put your point like that she's really good is, we were watching, Alf wanted to watch Psycho. And they were going, the rest of the family had to go out for whatever reason. And they were like, you can't watch Psycho. You have to watch Brian. Like he's going to bed early. Just watch him and stay locked up in the room. But then they wind up inviting over Mrs. Ackmanen. So she winds up coming over and she's like, okay. And she like has like her, all of her snacks and everything. And the minute they leave, she puts on Psycho and she's like watching and she's like, oh my God, oh my God. Like, and while this is going on, like the joke of the episode is like, she's getting scared because she keeps on hearing things because it's Alf trying to sneak out to watch the movie, but she's just so good. Like it's
a good physical reaction and
and it's also her reaction. That's another thing is like her reactions are human. Like I feel like a lot of times the way people, sometimes they do have it, but like the way people react to Alf and like it's like as if he was just like just like a new person that came in. It's like it's an alien and
he so like the last episode of Alf that we did that I did years ago was when basically it comes down to, can the older daughter go to a good college, or can Alf, basically, like, they have to spend so much money feeding Alf that they're like, well, you can go to a community college. Like, that is the, like, the big resolution at the end of the episode is, you can go to a community college for a couple years, and it's like, she's
so focused on Alf that any other comedic beats die on the vine. Alf's delivery, like Paul Fusco's delivery of every line, he has no comedic delivery. Yeah. Everything is given like this, and Willie, I'm going to tell the joke, and now it is that, and he just does it in this rat-a-tat manner, which doesn't work for any of the few jokes that they add in the episodes.
Yeah.
He flubs, and nobody else gets jokes. And
yeah, it is like, I do think that like, editing and direct, like if someone just re-edited this episode and just took out all of the weird awkward pauses, like at least if Alf was talking faster, it would work.
Yeah.
So like Raquel's like, the this new man Aaron King has rented a house, he has a southern accent, he's in his 50s, and he sings in the shower, and then she leaves, and then that isn't, so here's where I get confused about what in the world the episode wants us to think, because Alf uses all that to jump immediately to it's Elvis, which is kind of ridiculous, but then he does make the good point of like, Elvis's middle name was Aaron, and he was the king of rock and roll. So the fact that his name is Aaron King is also, so like that is kind of like, well, I don't know, Alf, if his name was not Aaron King, if his name was Bob Jones and he did those three things, I think that would be funnier for Alf. The episode does not ever decide whether or not
there's we've talked about this. I think that is going back to the many list of problems about Alf, but I think that is a huge, huge issue with the show is they never decide things. So yes, it was, which again, we never find out if, is this supposed to be Elvis hiding out? Is this an impersonator? Is this someone who just loves?
Because like, when he comes over,
yeah,
at first it is like, oh, Alf is pulling at straws, and then this man comes over with giant mutton chop sideburns,
yeah,
saying like, hey, thank you very much,
blah, he says blah, thank you very much, he loves the sandwich,
yeah, he's like, oh, is that
but Alf dug out red corduroy slippers from his trap. Yeah. They keep giving you clues that Alf is losing his mind and clues that Alf is totally right, and they both are just at complete odds comedically, and it's just
and it's the same thing with Alf in general of like they're either everyone's freaking out and needs to hide him, or he's walking around the neighborhood with a camera to go break into someone's house. Like, it's like, what? Like, yeah, I don't understand.
So at like the biggest example of this, I think, is when Alf makes a good point that like Elvis's middle name is Aaron and it's King. Mm-hmm. He's Aaron, the king of rock and roll. And Willie's like, no, that doesn't make sense. And then he decides to be like, Hank Aaron was a king of baseball. So it's like, no, writers, no, what are you doing? Like, and then he's like, Aaron Burr wanted to be the king of it. And it's like, you are muddying your
point.
And then
we came down to life is Nora.
And I was and then it's like Elvis Presley.
Elvis lives Nora. was an anagram of Elvis Presley or whatever.
Yeah.
So the writers for this, like you mentioned, are Al Jean and Mike Rice, who were the showrunners of The Simpsons for 3 and 4. They created The Critic. Mike Rice still the showrunner for Simpsons and co-wrote the movie. Like, some of the top comedic writers.
Well, seasons 3 and 4 of The Simpsons are the bad seasons, right?
They're not as good as season 28, which is what a lot of people think.
But that's like peak Simpsons.
Exactly. Like, these are two of what would become some of the like,
and also
top writers.
Not long after this either. This is January 1989, and what, season 3 of Simpsons is 1992?
Yeah.
Like,
so I think they had like one more. I think they maybe wrote for it, it's the Gary Shandling show, which is incredible.
Again, yeah.
And then I think went to The Simpsons after that.
I can see it, it is one of those things where I can see parts of it's like I can see what this script is trying to do sometimes. Like naming a book Elvis is Alive, I'm really, really sure is funny.
Funny,
but
yeah.
Through the filter of Alf, it just gets like lost. And it doesn't make there's no sense.
I wonder how much of like who was in charge in the writer's room with direction, all of that.
Paul Fusco, I'm sure, right?
Skews so much towards Paul Fusco.
Yeah,
and
I think
Alf.
That's what it is. I think it's because he was star. I don't want to say puppeteer because that would diminish.
Yeah,
Alf,
yeah, but, artiste. Puppet
auteur of Alf. Producer, like he, like this is his baby. I think a lot of that had to do with like what we're allowed to write, how we have to write things, how we have to do it. Like, which sadly,
yeah, just, Willie slips on a banana peel at one point in this episode, and they're like, and he says, "That's not that funny." Like, yeah. You put a random comedic trope in, you did it, said that's not that funny,
yeah.
And then,
and it's because he was making the sandwiches as Elvis bait. Now, I do have to ask, when they say deep fried banana and peanut butter sandwich, I'm like, yeah, I want one of those. That sounds great. Right? Am I crazy?
No.
That doesn't sound great. That sounds great to me.
No. See, he doesn't like bananas. I don't like peanut butter. So.
Oh, God. I like both bananas and peanut butter and deep fried stuff. So.
With deep fried, is it like essentially like a grilled cheese? Like you're not deep frying this; you're essentially like buttering and then grilling.
Yeah, and also like I mean, as someone that my at the beginning of quarantine, my husband got out the panini press that had been in storage above the. I'm short, so I can't reach above the fridge. He got it out, and then I just started panini pressing.
So wait, you phrased that as if Sebastian is no longer your husband. At the beginning of quarantine, my husband.
Yeah, things have been rough. Well, because I kept panini pressing literally everything. I have cooked everything on a panini press. French fries, peanut butter and jellies I've done.
Ooh. Okay.
So, yeah, like but it's like what I've learned is like you have to panini the bread separately because that shit will melt and go everywhere. Yeah. So like you can't. So I don't know how you deep fry it. Alf got proof by calling Aaron King at 3 a.m. and getting tape. And again, it sounds like Elvis. But then to prove his point, he's like, also backwards. It sounds just like Elvis backwards. Like, no, that's.
Yeah,
they're either like it's like it either needs to be that it is clearly Elvis and all of Alf's proof is meticulous and no one will believe him, or it is not Elvis and all of his proof is ridiculous and everyone's like that is, but it is both at the same time.
And also, I honestly I've been thinking about it since we watched it, but
I mean,
I
it's haunting.
Really understand? I don't understand the point of the. At breakfast argument that he has with Willie and pushes Willie into the wall.
Yeah. Is that?
I don't like, I was like, what is this? Do? Like there
when
nothing...
he steals his watch.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's the button of the thing. At least I got his watch. What?
I was like, I don't understand what's happening. Like I, yeah, it's, it
you
didn't.
Know, I think if the, if Willie was the main character, everything would make sense. Because if Willie's the main character, then there is this chaos agent in his house who doesn't make any sense, is always contradicting, steals his watch for no reason, and then Willie is like trying to live his life. Right. Kind of like like he's like a gremlin on his shoulder. That would make sense. But Alf is the main character, so Willie never gets to do anything except straight man, sometimes barely. I feel so bad for him.
Yes, because I was just going to say that at least then he could actually be the straight man, because that's the thing is like he, they'll have these moments where he's the straight man, but then also they'll have these moments where they have him being like really quirky and real, and you're like, what is his is he for Alf? Is he against it? Like, yeah. It's just like, yeah, there's nothing.
It's about.
He does have, though. He is so well cast as like the befuddled. He has a sitcom delivery that I don't think I've seen in anything like before.
Yeah, Max Wright is a genius. Like, he deserves so much better.
It's so good. Yeah. He's so just like, Alf, you can't. Why are you doing this?
It's a sincerity.
Well, yeah. I think it's also like, because he ain't acting.
I mean, you know that he like got in a full fight one time that they had to stop shooting with the puppet.
Yes,
he got in a huge fight.
Well,
with
there's
the
that
puppet.
Weird that interview excerpt where he's like, after we finished, we wrapped, and I just walked straight from the set into my car and never looked back or something. So it reads. Like, it's at this point when I'm watching the episode that I realized I can't think of a premise with lower stakes than this.
And the few low stakes that they have, they completely pull the rug out from under it after we haven't even. So Elvis comes over.
Yes, whatever. God, this made
me
scream.
He goes over, he breaks into Elvis's house, Aaron King's house.
But right before that, right before the act break, he's like, oh, I'm getting sleepy. I need to go lay down. And at that point, it's like, the rest of the episode's a dream. It's a dream. Yeah.
I hate that trope.
If you are sitcom, so usually what happens is the character does not say, I am sleepy. Mm-hmm. They just like hard cut and then they wake up and you realize that's what Steve-el is like on Family Matters. So if you are just sitcom literate, then when he says that, you know immediately, literally everything from this point on is a dream. And so therefore, what stakes they had, just gone.
Even in this now dream world, which they haven't said it's a dream, but we know it's a dream. But within this dream world with no stakes, they still don't make a choice as to whether this is Elvis. He could have gone over to the house and it could have been Elvis. Mm-hmm. And he could have been, I discovered Elvis. What are we going to do? And then they could have snapped out. Instead, he goes over and the guy says, no, I'm not really Elvis. And Alf is like, I think you're Elvis.
While he's in a house filled with Elvis memorabilia.
And he says he's from Tupelo, which is where Elvis is born. Which is like,
he's a truck driver from Tupelo.
It's like, what?
Yeah, like, so a better episode is Elvis comes over, he eats the sandwiches, Alf's like, fuck yeah. I got him. If you're trying to make Alf not a sociopath, you're like, oh, I can finally pay the Tanners back for all the food that they've paid for me by selling this to the tabloids. And then he sells Elvis to the tabloids, goes over there because he wants to like, just like be there when they get discovered. And then he either has a change of heart and is like, oh my God, I can't sell Elvis out. Because he's actually Elvis and pleads with him, or like, you know, or
which, what a great connection. Yes. Elvis living in hiding is like Alf living in hiding.
And then they have
stop
to like
with connections.
They don't care. And then it's like, then imagine the fun of after, you know, 2.5 seasons of Alf having to be hidden. If now he has to figure out how to hide Elvis while himself hiding.
Yes. Also, which I thought was like the saddest part. So like we have this sad reveal of nothing with Elvis.
Want to point out that they do
Mrs.
say
Oxmanin.
They do say out. that he's renting the house and he has fully redecorated everything. And being from New York, I'm like, you're going to have to repaint all that shit. Anyway, continue. Sorry.
I know. I think about that too. I know. I was saying to him, I was like, I should make sure we are going to stay in this apartment for another year because I don't want to put up things and then
you're worried about holes in the wall. And he's like, here's my Elvis everything anyway. So yeah, Ms. Ahmadic comes over
in a dream sequence to bring over this Sylvester Stallone
pot
food.
Roast. Yeah.
That's it.
But that is, I will say, that is one of the few, like, joke attributes they gave to somebody not Alf.
Yes.
Her nosiness and his later, like, you know, she's real nice, but she's always looking at me through binoculars. Or like, oh, you look real different. Like, that's actually a joke about someone who is an Alf, which is so rare in Alf that it needs to be pointed out.
Seeing as how, connections, when Aaron is like, you're that talking monkey I saw in Vegas. Yeah. Is that a reference to an Alf in Vegas episode? I thought about looking it up, and now I'm like,
I don't know.
Knowing Alf, probably not. I don't know.
But then his immediate response after is, oh, so you must be Elvis because you've been to Vegas.
Yes.
So then by that transitive equation, I'm Elvis because I have also
That would have been funny. And then you have Alf being like putting into Elvis drag. He's trying to record songs. He's trying to sell himself to the tabloids.
That would be hilarious.
The fact that they did an Elvis impersonator episode and they did not put Alf in fucking rhinestone jumpsuit. What are we doing here, people? It honestly does feel like this is the end of season 3 and they just are like, just fucking, you have 30 minutes, just write an episode. Like, it just...
The season 1 episodes are no better. It is the problem. It is Alf is a sociopath, right?
Yeah.
And you can't center a narrative arc around someone who inherently has no inward-facing qualities. And he doesn't. He is just there to, like, badly deliver rat-a-tat one-liners.
Yeah.
There's in the... So, like you said, we did go back because I remember loving Alf as a kid. And I clearly remember, all of the characters. Like, I saw them and I knew... like even the set and everything, but I couldn't remember anything about the plot. So I was like, I really want to go back. So we watched the first episode and they do this thing where it's like, just immediately they like have like one part where they like start to question like, oh, this is weird. But then it's just like, he's normal. Like it's not a big thing. Like he speaks English. Like it's not anything. And then they, at the end of that episode, they try to do like a little endearing thing where it's like he's trying to contact the rest of his fellow aliens.
Oh yeah, because his planet got blown up, right? Like he's like he casually mentions that in this episode.
Yes. So like he's trying to contact them. He's talking about how he misses them, but how this family is so nice. Da 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 da. I think that is the once and only time that there's like something. So you're kind of like, oh, is there going to be like this where he has like I learned something, or
Earth to Ned. Like in Earth to Ned, how every single episode of Earth to Ned on Disney Plus, which everyone should watch because it's puppets done so good, it ends with him sending his report and he has to like lie about the fact that he's not trying to destroy Earth because he's fallen in love with it and likes doing his talk show. And he has daddy issues and is just trying to improve. And that immediately like endears you to him. And if Alf was being a raving sociopath, doing all of his crazy Alf stuff that the kids love, but then at the end of the episode, he's like, I learned that. And I'm grateful that, boom, we're done. I do think that we all loved this show as kids because it was a puppet on television. Like that is, and it was also, it was a puppet, not on Nickelodeon. Like it was a puppet on where you weren't supposed to see a puppet. And it's like, there's a puppet on the adult
show.
And
he's doing like these silly, crazy things. I mean, like one thing is he was like, drinking beer, he's like throwing toilet paper around, he's all these crazy things that you're like, oh my god, I would be in so much trouble. Like it is very like, you could tell, I clearly could tell, like, oh, this is why me as a child was like, oh, this is funny, ha ha ha.
Yeah, he's a scam.
But there's really nothing else to it. It's like,
and it's very slow. It's
this
episode was really slow.
It was very slow. What I'm also realizing now is Alf is trying to be a Bugs Bunny Groucho Marx, which only works if you're in control of the scene and everything, right? Bugs Bunny can like change matter. He can change everything.
He's Groucho the smartest Marx. One in the room, and Alf is a dumbass. Or just like Alf is not. I don't know how smart Alf is. Like, honestly, I don't know. And that is a problem, too, is I don't know.
Yeah.
In sitcoms, this is a point that sitcoms always make, is you actually do have to low-key understand Golden Girls. Mm-hmm. Dorothy is the smartest. Then Sophia Blanche Rose.
Yeah.
And easy. That is where the jokes all fall in. Like,
yeah. Well, because everyone has their status point.
Yeah. And Alf is all over the map. And the one joke that I don't know if it was a good joke. It wasn't a good joke, but I was when Elvis is like, can I pet you? And then Alf takes a beat and says, only above the waist. And I was like, I didn't expect that. That's something. Yeah. And then Elvis tries, Aaron tries to prove that he's not Elvis by playing and singing horribly. And then Alf's excuse for why he can't sing well is because, oh, well, you've been dead for a while. And now we're like, oh, so Alf actually thinks that Elvis did die and has been resurrected, mm-hmm. which opens yeah. up a whole. So anyway, he wakes. Boy, I wrote boy child enters because I don't. Benji, is that his name?
Brian.
I think the actor might be named Benji. He enters. Alf wakes up. He was dreaming. Then, like, man, I don't know. The stinger at the end of it is just like Alf is still annoying the mom about it being Elvis. And then she's like, what would Elvis want you to do if he was really here? And he'd be like, leave him alone. Then Raquel comes. Oh, well, she thinks it was Buddy Holly. And then that was, and I wrote in my notes, that was entertainment, people.
And I mean, he vanishes. Like, yeah. They're like, oh, he moved out in the
middle of the night.
Which would make sense if it weren't a dream. If it had been not a dream and he went over and scared Elvis,
yeah, and scared
this
him
Elvis
away.
Guy.
Yeah. But instead, the reality of the situation is like, so he moves in with all of his Elvis stuff. No, mm-hmm. we don't actually know if that's what his apartment looks like because we haven't seen it. So he moves in, he gets a strange call in the middle of the night. Then the next day he goes over, gets a fruit basket that had a bite taken out of it and a good sandwich that I think that I would love to make right now if I have bananas. Then he goes home and is like, I got to peace out overnight.
Yeah.
That's it. That's his life. So, like, what is that?
So it's like that. Even
why
that
did they
little
make
bit,
that?
I'm like, oh, is he a crimp? Like now, I'm like, is he a crimp?
Yeah. Yeah. What, why did they make it a dream?
Yeah.
They didn't have to do that.
No.
It's completely useless that it was a dream.
Yeah, and it's just confusing. I think they even forgot themselves that they made it a dream because Raquel come over and be like, oh, he moved out, because there's no reason for him to move out because he literally just moved in.
I wonder if it was one of those things where like they wrote the script and then they were like shooting it, and then all of a sudden Paul Fusco's like, wait a second, it's in the show Bible that no one but the Tanners can know that Elf is like something like that, and then they have let's just
so
make
that's
it a dream.
Great. There is, if you go to the Elf wiki, there is a list of who has and has not seen Elf, but they put down each character's alignment, whether they are good, neutral, or evil. So for instance, the neighbor, she has seen Elf. Right. And like their, I think, nephew or grandkid or something.
Yeah, their nephew.
Wait, Raquel has seen Elf?
Yes.
When?
But I don't think she realizes it's Elf.
Oh, okay.
Right?
Yeah.
And then there's like other characters, like there's a burglar who sees Alf. And
well, there's a Halloween episode where because it's Halloween, he gets to go and party with the Tanners. Sure. Yeah.
And so, yeah, there's a list of who has seen Alf, and it's broken down to like, oh, well, the burglar saw him, but he is evil.
What does that mean? That he
I don't
can't
know.
Be trusted? Like, what is
self-wiki.
I am now really nervous that we've poked an Alf hive.
Alf apparently very popular in Germany.
Oh
so.
My god. But the other reason that maybe they put him into the dream. So did you notice in the credits, the insane thing in the credits? Towards the end of the credits, title comes up of we acknowledge the cooperation of the estate of Elvis Presley. Elvis, in quotes, and Elvis Presley, in quotes, are registered trademarks of Elvis Presley Enterprises. And then end of the credits.
Huh.
So that also opens up a Pandora's box of like, can you not say the words Elvis on television without
you
going to...
You absolutely can.
Yeah, so like, what is that?
It's not like the Super Bowl, which even that is like really shaky legal ground that people are just like, well, we don't want to fuck with the NFL, so we're going to call it the big game instead of the Super Bowl. But you can still reference any,
Well, and also because like Elvis, if that is the case, then Full House must have just had like a budget for Elvis references, because it's every episode.
Oh no, what is Dave Coulier saying? Okay, hold on.
Uncle Jesse bases his entire persona on Elvis.
Yeah.
And like, it's so like, that this isn't in the credits of that. Like, what is happening? Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, then it makes me wonder if like the Elvis estate was like, make it a dream. How dare you? I don't know.
We don't want Alf associated with
JFK is, of course, the lawyer for
We do not want our estate.
Are y'all ready for some must-have facts about this episode?
Absolutely.
Yes.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Okay, so how many people do you think watched this episode of Television in the millions?
Because I'm going to say 14 million.
What do you say?
I say 8 million.
Fucking 18.4 million motherfuckers watched this episode of television.
Well, you know.
18.4 million. It was the number 9 most watched show that week.
1% of America probably at the top watched this episode.
Like, so the top 5 shows that week, Alf was 9, and then Who's the Boss is 5, 60 Minutes is 4, A Different World is 3, Roseanne 2, and Cosby Show 1. So like, we're in that part of the 80s where like the top 2 shows, we can't really it's weird. Yeah. Roseanne, she's an interesting person. What a time for television.
I mean, I remember seeing an interview with Alan Alda when Seinfeld was ending, and they were like, well, do you think the Seinfeld finale is going to get numbers that will make the finale of MASH no longer the most watched show? And he was like, no, that's impossible.
Yeah.
Like, there's just too many things now.
Yeah.
That's and now it's definitely the case. Yeah. And I think that Alf does... it checks the boxes because it's like kids will, like, parents will watch it because kids will shut up for 30 minutes, you know? Like, it's not, they're not doing that for Kate and Allie or whatever. So the NBC Monday night lineup, which Alf was part of, was Alf kicked off the night with they kicked off the night with this high octane episode of Elvis sleuthing. Followed it up with an episode of The Hogan Family, which was Rhoda Valerie Harper's show. Was like, hi, can I actually be paid like I'm the lead of a show? And have also led my own show, and also was on the Mary Tyler Moore Show, for which I won Emmys, and they were like, no, we'll just kill you instead. And so then it became Valerie's Family, and then it became The Hogan Family. The absolute shade. I'm still mad about that. So then,
God, she's a woman. Stop it.
Yeah.
She doesn't need any of that.
And then, as always, 9 p.m. is the Monday night movie on NBC. And this night, it was part 2 of a mini series called Brotherhood of the Rose. And so part 1 of Brotherhood of the Rose aired the night before, after the Super Bowl. This episode aired the Monday after the Super Bowl in 1989.
Wow.
Yeah. Good stuff, right? So here is the... Did y'all look up the guy who played the Elvis? Did you?
No, actually, I didn't.
He was played by Pete Wilcox. And he's Elvis. He's an Elvis impersonator.
Like,
literally, every one of his credits is Elvis. He was a series regular or recurring on a short-lived show in the early 80s, where his name was, like, The King, and then I clicked on it, and it's, like, it's a show about, I don't know, like, a diner or something, but it's, like, all the colorful characters that come in, and he's, like... A crazy person thinks he's Elvis. Right. So he's played Elvis impersonators on Cheers, Designing Women, Full House, ER, Charles in Charge, and he has starred, he has appeared in three separate episodes that are titled The King and I. You love it.
Which this episode, so I didn't realize every episode of ALF, or almost every episode, is a song title, and this is the only one where it makes sense, and then they never kind of, like, connect it, possibly due to rights issues.
It's so... Why? I don't know. So on IMDb, 169 ALF heads rated this episode 7.6 out of 10. Would you go higher, lower, or is that right on the money? 7.6.
I'd have gone low. I would go so far lower. I think I can't see the best episode of ALF has to be at best a 5 or 6. And this, I would put it like a 1 or a 2. It is just nonsense. Yes, it is just, it is badly written, directed, paced.
Going off of log line.
Yes, which is why I picked this episode.
It meets the log line.
Yeah. Well, and like the premise is so like Elvis mania, Elvis, like, but they have a juicy premise. They have this great banana and peanut butter deep fried sandwich. And they're like, no, I want an apple.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I would 4.8, like, no, like 3.6. I'm not going to say this is the worst episode that I've done on Must Have Seen TV, because Blossom's Gun in High School episode was not a pleasant experience.
I'm going to have to revisit that. Yeah. Oh, my God.
It's rough. Who had the must-see performance in this episode? Who really...
I mean, I'm going to say Willie, just because he always, like, he is so flustered. He comes into the shed so flustered and angry at ALF. I do think there is something kind of funny about just, like, a sitcom where one character is just, like, he's Willie Loman. Like, he is about to drive into a mall full of people because he has been driven to the edge by this insane person.
He's great.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you love to see him playing the Vulture in a Spider-Man movie from the 80s? Like,
oh, yes.
God. Anyway. So, yeah, Courtney, who would you give? He has passed under scandalous circumstances.
Because it was recently, right? Like a year or two ago.
Well, it's one of those... hearsay, but like found dead in like a German porn like theater or something. Yeah. Like,
I was gonna say, like, I think it was like a sex club or something.
Yeah, or something like, but then it's like, I don't know how true that is. Like, the whole like Paul Lind like died after getting like taken poppers to get fucked. Like, no, he just had a heart attack. Yeah. So I don't know. Yeah. People like putting salacious shit on deaths, and you know, Max Wright, we love you. I also say best performance of the episode is Max Wright by far. Like, because Liz Sheridan also doesn't get anything good to do, and what she does get, she's not directed well or edited well, so it just destroys her performance. Oh.
Yeah. It's it's him or honestly the Elvis impersonator. I mean, he was really good.
I mean, the Elvis impersonator, he always plays it as if he's not Elvis. Even when he's saying the Elvis catchphrases, he's like tossing them off.
Yeah.
And he never once breaks his reality, whereas ALF is just everything else is all over the map.
Yeah, you could clearly tell he made the decision, like, no, I'm not Elvis. I just happen to.
Yeah. For once in my career. Like
and I love him, but I am not him. But yeah.
He has this line of, oh, I wish I were Elvis. Which there's something there. This poor man wants to be Elvis.
Yeah.
That's the other thing. Like, what if he wanted to be Elvis? Alf goes over there. He's like, well, I'm not Elvis, but I want to be Elvis. And Alf is like, well, I'll help you out. I'll sell you to the tabloids. Great. And, but he cannot do a convincing Elvis impersonation for his life.
Oh, my God. Alf as the colonel to this Elvis impersonation.
Imagine with him with the hat on. Oh, God.
I'm just saying.
There's so much.
We could take the 30 minutes it took them to write this episode and write. We've come up with at least two or three better premises.
Yeah.
My assumption is this really feels like, I don't know how much they were like in the writer's room for the whole season, or if this was one of those, hey, you know what? Here are our list of ideas. We have our standard writers. Okay, let's just farm these out to a couple people.
We wrote an Alf. Like, here's... Exactly. Well, let me see. List of ALF episodes. How many episodes did ALF
do? I think they wrote one episode for season two.
Oh, they wrote a total of four episodes.
Okay.
Yeah. But,
and so I wonder if it was... Because, yeah, often with, you know, when there's 26 episodes, whatever, it's like you have your standards, and then you have a couple people who are like...
Yeah.
Essentially,
I don't think there was a tight writer's room. They weren't talking to each other.
I don't think there was a tight anything. I think it was... Alf and then everybody
else.
I will
say, the puppetry is fine. I think he's a good...
It's also interesting, though. So when he originally pitched Alf, he was shot down because the executive who watched it was like, no, whatever. You know, Jim Henson does it so much better. Which one of the puppetry innovations that Jim Henson kind of like built into puppetry was the... You can't express a face, so use body movement to replace it, right? Which is why every Muppet, you know exactly. You can picture how Kermit moves, how he falls, how Miss Piggy moves. They express with their body because their eyes aren't moving, right?
Ah!
Yeah.
Exactly, right? You know all of that.
Yeah.
Alf moves his, like, ears and his nose, but he rarely moves his body.
A lot of hands going like blah, blah, blah. Yeah, that is true.
Which is his left hand, because apparently Paul Fusco is left-handed, and so he would do the left hand, and another puppeteer who she later did Sesame Street stuff would just do the right hand. So I think that's why there's a lot of weird so the puppetry is like okay.
I mean, I think the puppetry, like the best things about this show, Backstreet, and then maybe the puppetry, which shows you what we're dealing with. Must other people see this episode of television?
I would say no, and I would say no episode of ALF, and that hurts me to say as such a huge fan of ALF growing up.
I really think like keep it in your lockbox. Yeah,
there are some God, there are some holiday episodes. I don't have time to look this up. Jesus Christ. But there are some. Like, I feel like... I think I did like that Halloween episode where... Well, because there was conflict. The Tanners didn't want to have a Halloween party. But Alf was like, this is my one night a year where I get to, like, be my fucking self. So he, I think, like... forces them to have a Halloween party, and then the boss comes over and Alf is doing his Alf stuff and they all love him and Willie is freaking out. That's a brilliant premise. They actually execute it. I think that episode is a good episode. And as I said, that Christmas two-parter is one of the most relentless episodes of television that has ever aired. And I do think that if you want to have your mind absolutely blown, you gotta sit down and watch a very Alf special Christmas or whatever.
But this otherwise, like a lot of episodes, they will go like whenever Raquel comes over, it's like, oh, it's the nosy neighbor. Like they refer to her, it's like as if they know she's the sitcom trope.
See, that's another cool thing that they could have done if they were like, if Alf knew he was in a sitcom.
Sure.
Because he had like Melmacian vision or something, or because they had sitcoms, that's the only thing they could watch on Melmac. Like,
which would explain in the intro how they got all this footage of Alf.
Yes, how he knows how to use video cameras.
Yeah, there's a lot of just open ended stuff that you're like, how? It's like there's certain things where it's like he com- completely understand to an like to the extreme, or he has no concept at all. It's like there's really no in between there, and nothing is ever.
I mean, so like of all the Alf episodes, I feel like from the Alf episodes I watched that this one was spectacularly underwhelming, even compared to the other Alf episodes.
Agreed.
Yeah, because really nothing happens. Nothing is achieved. Nothing like there's
and the things that do happen, they undo.
Yeah, it's a dream, and it like it already has low stakes. They make it even lower, and I think that even like the episode that we also did on Must Have Seen TV early on, which was. I think it's called school, something about school. Alf gets like a paper route, and he actually like the living room gets filled up with papers, and they're like, "What the fuck are you like?" There's something is happening.
Yeah.
Nothing happens in this one. So hopefully, Alf heads, Alf hards, Alphanauts. You hopefully Alf hards. When you heard we were doing Suspicious Minds, you're like, oh god, oh no. It's like if I said I was doing like a beer bat of Buffy or something, which is or Double Meat Palace, which are the notorious episodes of Buffy. Oh wow. Well, hey, welcome back to Must Have Seen TV. Getting started with something that I think could be used as a torture device if you just played this episode on a loop. I think this like college teachers that teach screenwriting could like play this episode and be like, fix it or tell me all the ways it is. Like, this is kind of textbook what not to do in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's no B story. The cold open connects, does not connect. There's like a random in between the cold open and this other thing. They throw something. It's baffling how it even has any form at all.
And like it trying really to make sense of it. Yeah. All the decisions and none of the decisions. But you know what? Hey, where can people find you on the internet if they want to specifically harangue you about Alf?
On Instagram at C, like the ocean, S-E-A, Halyard, H-A-L-Y-A-R-D. And yeah, DM me. I post things, my food and...
And I am at CurtisRutherford.com, RETHERFORD.com, and I'm actually Curtis on pretty much everything else.
Woo! And that does it for this episode of Must Have Seen TV. Thanks again to my guests, Curtis Rutherford and Courtney Rose Halyard, for dropping by and getting through that episode of Alf with me. Next time, I will be discussing the Barney Miller episode, The Desk. The Desk is in Season 6, Episode 8, and y'all, you can stream it for free on Crackle. If you do it right now, because Crackle changes what seasons are available every single month, which is the absolute worst way to stream television.
Yes.
Sony, get your act together. Or Chicken Soup for the Soul, who actually owns the majority of... Yeah, weird. Until then, I want to hear from all you. Follow Must Have Seen TV on Twitter and Instagram at @MustHaveSeenTV. If you like what you've heard, please rate and review the show in iTunes. We have like 48 five-star reviews, but 5 1-star reviews, which... I chalk up to like MAGA QAnon assholes coming in and being like, he's talking about how things relate to modern times. Or maybe they just hate me being gay. Who knows? That's what I'm. If you rate this podcast 1 star, is you're homophobic. So please go leave a review. That would be great. Follow me on Twitter and Instagram at @BrettWhite. Read the words that are right at decider.com. Thanks to Acast for hosting the podcast. Thanks to y'all for listening. We're back, hopefully, regularly. I'll see y'all next time on Must Have CTV.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.